104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with a big story of the day.
I just gotta do it. Just gotta do it.
That's McCarr jumps in. Moves it and shoots it. Welcome to the National Hockey League.
What a moment. It's DMAC with 104.3thefan.com's James Marillat. Wow!
Day two, throwing me in here, huh? That's how this is going to work?
James, first of all, I'm so glad you're here at The Fan. I've been such an admirer of you and your buddy Doug Otwell for so many years. And I had the absolute pleasure of writing for Mile High Sports Magazine for years. And I drove everybody nuts. I was late with everything. And boy, did I need spell check and punctuation help and this, that, the other stuff. But it was really awesome, participating in that magazine for the time that I did. And even though I worked with Doug a little bit more directly than you, I have so much respect for what you guys built. And your presence in the sports community in Denver has just been awesome. So I have the greatest amount of admiration for you and what you've done here over the years.
Well, you weren't the only one that was late. You weren't the only one who needed spell check. There was a long list of people who fall into that category. But yeah, it was a fun run. I mean, we started that, all the way back in 2002. So, you know, talking with Doug recently, it's like the 20th anniversary of that magazine is coming up.
Just awesome.
Here relatively soon. We did a bunch of digital work over there as well. So hoping to bring some of those ideas and more here to The Fan and do that online here with your digital platform.
Yeah, I'm so excited for that. It's a way media is just kind of going. And the commitment that we're going to make, that we have made, and we'll work under your leadership on 104.3thefan.com should be really spectacular. So it's an interesting concept in terms of just the media period, like where everybody's going. But more and more, it feels like the big pie is digital media, and it's sort of who's gonna get the most amount of bites, who's going to get to that to the middle, and. You got to have somebody like you who's overseeing and running something with your expertise. So I'm thrilled. And it means exposure to all sorts of things. You know, it's not just one thing. It's going to be a myriad of things, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it'll give us the opportunity to talk about every team here in town. You know, you can't get to everything during this three-hour period or during all the shows on The Fan during the day. So it'll allow us to augment all that content, whether it's with written, with podcasts, with videos, you name it. I mean, the sky is kind of the limit. But, yeah, we're definitely going to touch on everything, cover all the teams. The sky is really the limit. So we're excited about it. It's going to be great.
If you want to just talk about great stories, and that's what I love, are great stories. It is hard. Now, we had some, and we'll go to Dove Valley Live here in a little bit. They're changing things with Vic Fangio. Was out there today. He is your grandpa's grandpa. He is the frumpy sweats. And kind of just meandering around a little bit and got his little... I mean, he looks comfortable. That guy looks comfortable. You know, Vance Joseph was walking around there with his schmedium shirts and, Gary Kubiak had his dyed black, jet black hair and Josh McDaniels had his whistle and Wade was just cool. He's just Wade.
Vic's persona is endearing in April. I'm not sure that'll be endearing if they get off to an 0-4 start, right? That's part of why what you say about McDaniels and what you say about VJ, we look at him in his medium shirts. Had that guy come in here and won, we would have a different perspective on
that's
it, right?
That's right.
So right now, Fangio's a breath of fresh air. It's different. It's kind of like, okay, it's the new era of Broncos football. But again, he's 0-0 in April, so it's endearing at this point.
Yeah, we'll go over some of the thoughts and what we saw out there today in just a little bit. But in terms of a Denver story, as you've been here your whole life and have covered so many stories, where would you put Cale Makar's goal in the pantheon of just ridiculous stories here in Denver?
You know, it's pretty high up because it falls into that category of, boy, if you wrote this as a script, everybody would laugh you out of the room, right? Like the guy wins the Hobie Baker, he's in a championship game, and then he, you know, plays in his first NHL game that's a playoff game against his hometown team and scores a goal. Like, it's preposterous. It's ridiculous. So from that standpoint, it's a great, great story. There still is a part of me, though, that feels like it's just weird. Like, why is a guy able to play in the Frozen Four this past weekend, and now he's playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
It's an interesting rule. I love the rule that, got to think about this for a second. What if in other sports you could be drafted and you could develop other places before you had to go to somewhere professionally? Kind of a kooky NHL rule, because you can be drafted, they retain your rights, and you can go play on a junior team, you could go play on an NHL team, and you get to develop while teams still retain your rights, as opposed to baseball, where you can be drafted at 18 and you can go to a major league team and good luck, here you go to A ball and high A and maybe double A, and good luck, and we'll see you in 3 or 4 years. Or like Brendan Rodgers, who was drafted out of high school by the Rockies. 4 years later, James, still in minor league baseball.
Yeah, still languishing. It's just, it'd be the equivalent, though, if Zion all of a sudden, once Duke was out of the NCAA tournament, is suiting up for the Nets in their playoff series. It feels to me, though, like this isn't the Avalanche team they had all year.
It's a quirky rule.
And now they're getting to compete with a different...
Yeah, but the Zion thing... You'd have to have the draft during the season, and they don't. They don't have the NBA draft, and it's a little bit different too, because you'd have to think of, really what you'd have to think is they would have the draft when he graduated high school, right? Which they don't. But what if they did? What if, yeah, but he would never go, right? Like, he would just go to the NBA at 18. You know, it's so quirky, you can't even explain it. And it can really kind of only happen in hockey.
And I'm with you in terms of, I like the rule for the player. I actually like the rule from the organization standpoint of development. It's better for him to go to college than it has been for Brendan Rodgers to go languish in the minors. So I agree with you. I just think if you were sitting in Calgary today, you'd be saying, why are we having to compete against a different team than what the Avalanche had all season?
Well,
that seems a little unfair.
Okay. It goes back to one of my favorite. I have two awesome NFL stories. One is the David Benn story. Do you know who David Benn was?
I do not.
Guess who? Know who else didn't know who David Benn was? Was Orlando Franklin. And you not knowing is really not a big deal, but Orlando not knowing should be more important. Why? Because David Benn is a long snapper and actually played next to Orlando Franklin in a playoff game, and Orlando did not realize who this guy was, nor did he remember years later that he was ever on the team. The situation was Lonnie Paxton's wife was having some pregnancy issues, and everything turned out okay, thank God. It was after the Steelers Miracle Tebow game, and Lonnie could not travel. David Benn had played for the Chargers for 18 years, but it was out for the year. He's got an unbelievable pass. He, like, has the most games played for the Chargers and used to date Pamela Anderson. But after 18 years, he just was doing nothing. The Broncos signed him on a Friday, and he met the team the next day to fly out. Had about 12 snaps. They were all perfect. We got shellacked by the Patriots. Tom Brady's punting on third down, and Von Miller's throwing haymakers. But he was fine, and it was immediately released as soon as the game was over. Because there's a rule in the NFL, like a lot of sports, that you can add people kind of in a crazy way at the last second. My other great story, Tyquan Underwood, while playing receiver for the Patriots, was cut the morning of the Super Bowl. And they added a player to the roster who subsequently was deactivated. So it might sound like the harshest thing in the world. And for Tyquan, it was pretty harsh. Even if he wasn't going to play in the game, I mean, yeah, at least get to dress out a little bit and be on the sideline. For Tyquan, he couldn't do that. But they were trying to get a roster bonus or something. They were trying to do something financially for this other basically practice squad sort of guy.
Sure, but we're talking about, in those examples, a long snapper in the 53rd guy on the roster versus a guy who comes out and scores the third goal of the game.
It's amazing.
Right? Like, he's having a much bigger impact. There was a long snapper for the Giants back in the day who came out of retirement for a playoff game.
I do, he was terrible.
And screwed it up against the 49ers.
That's right.
It more often than not happens that direction. Trey Junkin, I want to say, is his name, off the top of my head.
I do think you're right.
And so there are guys that they're not going to impact the game unless they totally screw it up.
The crazy thing is, just in sports, this can happen. The insane thing is that it happened. It could happen, is that it did happen, and happened with just such a impact that this kid, who's ridiculously talented, I mean, when you watch highlights of him, it's stunning to think he's actually a defenseman.
Yeah.
It's confusing if you watch the highlights that he's a defenseman, because his speed and scoring ability is, you know, off the charts. So it was a magical thing. It was awesome. And to me, it's one of the better stories in the history of Denver sports.
Oh, it was a great moment. And I'm coming out of the chutes being the wet blanket, right? Raining on the parade.
No.
It was a great moment. And I kind of had the reaction, you know, they kept showing his mom and dad.
Yeah.
And they sort of had this, like, not aw shucks, but kind of a, like, what is he going to do next? Like, it's just one miraculous thing after another, right? Like, imagine being those folks the weekend they've had, seeing their son win the Hobie Baker, playing in the Frozen Four. Last night, it's just like, man, nothing surprises him at this point.
Yeah. It was like waiting for him to get in a fight or something during the game. Yeah, can you imagine that?
Exactly. It's about the only thing he's missing.
By the way, there was a 19-year-old in the playoffs who challenged Ovechkin to a fight, and now he's in the concussion protocol. Like, it's the weird thing about hockey. Like, you got to prove your... Ovechkin never fights. And this 19-year-old kid challenged him. I forget. I think he's a Russian kid, or he's... Well, I don't know. He's got one of them names that I can't pronounce. And Ovechkin flattened him and bounced his skull off the ice. And the kid is, you know, now just like toast.
Tried to make a name for himself.
He tried.
Here you are not remembering his name.
Yeah.
None of us do.
No. But Cale Makar, what a night. I think the Nuggets will get back on pace tonight. I think they're going to win and win easily. We'll see. We'll talk to Earl Boykins in about a half hour or so. We'll have Earl on. Was out at Broncos today, and we'll go live. This usually doesn't happen. Things are changing a little bit, James. They're doing their practices later. They're going to have their press. Usually this is happening in the middle of the day. But there's a new boss in town, Vic Fangio, and doing things just a little bit differently. So they had a walkthrough session, and then they took a break, got some food, had some meetings, and now the practice. And that's kind of reversed from the traditional way to do things. Usually they get you out in the morning, they plan things out, and they just get to the walkthrough later on.
Is there a rhyme or a reason to the change? Fangio explained, here's why I want to do it different. It worked here, or is it change for change's sake? Or why are they doing it differently at Dove Valley now?
I literally don't know. But it's different. And hopefully somebody will throw that question.
Well, and at this point, right?
I really have no idea what the logic is.
Doing everything different. It's
fine by me.
The George Costanza rule. Whatever they did in the past, do the opposite now. It can only help.
Yeah, sure. And I was pointed out to me by the people in the know over there, just kind of like, hey, notice something. I'm trying to notice things different. First of all, there's so many changes. I don't, like, who is everybody now? You know, because there's, you know, a dozen new coaches. There's tons of different players. Joe Flacco, tall.
Looks good in a suit.
I'm telling you. But it was pointed out to me because I was looking at the jerseys. I'm like, man, those orange jerseys look like shinier or something. There's something up. They were wearing game jerseys for practice, not practice jerseys.
Okay. So not the mesh, the big thick mesh like we used to wear
not
in the 70s
mesh
and 80s.
That the Broncos have used forever. So instead of those mesh sponsor up on the left, just the mesh sort of shirts, they were game shirts.
Which actually does make some sense, though, right? You want to practice in the same thing you're going to wear in the game. They probably have a little bit of a different feel.
I was told that.
That one I can understand.
I was told that, and that they're a little harder to grab onto. So you have to emphasize all that sort of stuff. But of course, when I see something like this or hear something like this, it's like, well, why have we been doing it wrong all this time if this is the right way to do things?
Right, right. Why didn't anybody else think of this years and years and years ago?
I can't answer that question. I don't know.
But that doesn't mean you should keep doing it the wrong way. Like, at least they finally figured it out. Maybe we give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, Belichick at the Super Bowl was asked the question, how do you build a roster? Great. It's one of the better Super Bowl questions. Been to a lot of Super Bowls. One of the better ones ever asked. Because Belichick doesn't expound on anything ever except for the 3 or 4 days during the Super Bowl that leads up to the Super Bowl. That's it. That's the only time he'll ever go on about something else or his inspiration or his dad or whatever. Like, he's great. He has given epically long answers for Bill Belichick during Super Bowl week. But other than that, it's always just the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. So the only time you really get to hear Bill Belichick talk at length are those days. So you got Bill Belichick's philosophy on building a roster. And more or less what he said was, you know, there's probably 3 or 4 different ways to solve every problem in life. And the trick is figuring out how to combine all those options into one where it makes sense. Like, sometimes you need a guy for a week. Sometimes you need to do something to get a guy ready for a long time. Sometimes you try to get the final year out of a player, you know, that sort of thing when you're building a roster. And you got to put that all together. So while we bandy about all sorts of things here on this radio station, the real answer, James, is there's probably multiple ways to answer whatever situation presents itself.
Yeah, and, you know, I think with every roster, there are 6 great players. So part of it is having the right guys that are filling those roles, right? Not divas, guys that buy into the system, mm-hmm. guys that are on board and can lead. And then everybody else is kind of a bunch of guys, but you have to have the right mix of the bunch of guys that fill in the gaps properly with the stars, and that's what other teams haven't figured out, and that's what Belichick has down better than anybody else in the league. All the ingredients go together.
So you probably just have to, now, it obviously helps when you just have the greatest quarterback of all time. That makes you look like
a genius
right there.
When that's one of your 6 stars, that definitely helps.
Yeah, if you're John Wooden, it helps that you had, you know,
Lou Alcindor, Bill Walton.
Right. And, you know, your buddy Sam cheating left and right to keep everybody else on the roster.
There.
Let's look at the pyramid of success. It starts with Sam paying everybody off.
Having a great booster was definitely beneficial.
That is the crazy. The UCLA their history of UCLA basketball is maybe the most corrupt of all, but yet everybody genuflects at the altar of John Wooden. Another topic. In terms of what the Broncos have to do, James, well, maybe we just start here because we're going to hear maybe the scintillating details about you know, the jerseys and the practice time, which is great. They also did some other kind of interesting things, sort of. They're taking care of the main practice area, so when everybody goes out, when you go out to Dove Valley for training camp, that area is not to be touched. They're using the practice field, which is, I think, they call practice field 3, and the field house. So today, the offense, those that are on offense that are here, go to the Pat Bowlen Center, and the defense is out on the field. And I guess they're going to change it up tomorrow. Other than that, it's like non-contact, but you do get a sense of just seeing everybody out there for the first time. Fangio is going to be interesting. I think you hit the nail on the head with what works and is great and adorable and whatever here. If it works, cool. But you can already see the other side of the coin, can't you?
Yeah, and it's a little bit, you mentioned Wade Phillips. He's a prime example. And, you know, when he's Uncle Wade and he's the defensive coordinator and their defense is great, everybody loves that persona.
Yeah.
When he's the head coach and they lose games because of sloppy play, people don't love the Uncle Wade persona who's laid back and maybe a player's coach and, you know, he's hanging out with the guys and putting on the bling and all that kind of stuff. So it just depends on the scenario. Winning makes all that stuff really cute and fun and endearing.
Right.
Losing, especially if you're losing in ways that seem to go hand in hand with that personality trait, then all of a sudden it becomes problematic.
All right, let's get to some of the basics. Where are you on 10?
On 10 on Emmanuel?
No, sorry. By the way, Emmanuel was...
Maybe I don't know your code.
Sorry, 10, draft pick number 10.
Oh, yeah, number 10, okay.
Really quick on Emmanuel, he did participate in some stretching stuff, but as soon as it got to anything active, running around, he's off to the side. But there, present, you know, participating as much as he can.
Which is good. Big injury to come back from at that position at his age. I'm cautiously optimistic on that 10.
I think they definitely want it to work out. It will be one of the bigger storylines throughout training camp because it's an $8.5 million decision.
Yeah.
And they have all camp to figure it out. They don't. There's no money that has to be committed until after the season starts.
The trick to it is, though, if it doesn't work out and you decide, hey, we want to save that $8.5 million, man, they are really thin and really inexperienced behind him.
So far.
So unless you go out and get somebody else or do something, you know, that won't be something they address on draft day, at least in terms of guys they pick. That'll come in and solve that problem in terms of inexperience. But yeah, they if he's not able to go, it seems to me like they would have to go out and get a veteran receiver to bring in here.
So at number 10, the Broncos draft.
I'm in the rare camp of I think they take Drew Lock. I think they go quarterback.
Yes. Oh, really?
I think John Elway.
Well, you think that's the best idea? You think that's the best idea, or you think that's what they do?
I think that's what they do. I don't think that's the best idea. I think if they were going to take a quarterback when you were sitting at number 5, which is rare for you, and when it's a quarterback loaded draft, that because they could have got anybody they want. Number 5, you're high enough, you could have traded up to any pick, you could have got who you wanted.
Right.
I think it's a reach, but I think John Elway is tired of guys like you, guys like me, questioning his ability to find a quarterback. I think he likes Drew Lock. I think he's in love with that talent, and he's going to go get him, bring him in here, and there's no pressure to play him right away because he's got the veteran to play this year. I think Drew Lock is their pick at 10.
James, me and you are going to get along.
When it comes to quarterbacks, we're going to get along well.
We're going to get along.
That is 100% true.
Look at that. You realize what I have to battle with every day. With
the khaki pants.
I did a little research, by the way, too. I got some numbers. I mean, if just basic logic doesn't make sense enough, I've got some numbers. We can go there. I'd like to explore that more with you, for sure. Get ready, Mike Evans. It's going to be rough. In terms of the Broncos, we're going to hear from, Joe Flacco and Vic Fangio and all your favorites live here on The Fan. That's coming up next.
Okay. We interrupt to take you live to Dove Valley for this Broncos press conference.
A pretty good bit, you know. That's one of the problems when you have 2 weeks of meeting times and no practices. You can put a lot in a meeting without the reps on the field. It's, you know, I don't want to say not as good, but so now we're getting, you know, so they've been exposed to more offense and defense than we practiced today. So we're slowly putting it in on the field.
Have you been in contact with Chris
Harrison? I have not since the start of the offseason program.
It's voluntary, but is it disappointing that one of your key
guys? No, that's just part of the NFL landscape. It seems to happen a little bit each year.
Now that you're out here with the guys, does this make this a little more real for you?
Yeah, a little bit, but you know, it just seems normal. Yeah.
Was it odd though, not focusing your eyes on one group?
A little bit. You know, if it was if I was just a defensive coordinator, I probably would have been talking some smack out there. but I have to refrain from that a little bit. But I won't. I'll still be talking both ways. Now, I can be on the winning side either way now.
Sure. You can't lose.
Yep.
Emmanuel Sanders, are the reports you're getting from the trainers that he's on the right path?
Yeah, he's progressing well. Everything that we've been told and what he says, he's progressing well.
With your offensive line, can you say who first group you got out there, especially on the interior?
Not yet. You know, it's first day out there. I haven't even seen the video yet of it, but we're a long ways from determining that.
Chuck on his own was studying film of how you used Khalil Mack last year. Is that good indication you're the guy who's like wants to apply it and maybe see if that can work for him in some way this year in your defense?
Oh, sure. I mean, players study other players all the time. He's got the advantage of studying a really good player in Khalil, one of the top players in the league, in the defense that he's getting ready to play in. So that's a double dose of good things to look at.
What are your expectations for Jake Butt in terms of working him back?
He's doing good in his recovery. Everything that we've been told is positive. He's progressing nicely and Still no timetable exactly when he'll be back.
You signed Busby last week, a couple weeks ago. Being familiar with him, how much does that sort of help his transition?
I would think it would help his transition. But Boz has got to count on his recall and remember some of the things that we were doing back then, because some of it we're still doing now. And he's got a little bit of an advantage in that he's just come off playing in the AAF. And so his body's a little bit more in tune to football shape right now than some of the other guys.
His speed intriguing for you?
His speed? Yeah, he's got talent. You know, he can run. He's got movement abilities. He played a little bit for us a couple years ago, played a little bit for the Eagles, I believe, this past season, and obviously played in the spring league that just was going on. So he's got a chance.
Was that an interesting situation there with all those AAF guys suddenly becoming available?
Yeah, it was. You know, for the first couple of days, the NFL wouldn't let you sign any of them or talk to them, and then at some point there they said it was okay. So there was a handful of guys that got signed.
When you watch draft prospects, do you like watching staff, or do you like taking a look by yourself and sharing?
By myself at first. I like everybody to watch them by themselves, form their own opinions, not be influenced by others' opinions, especially if I say something in a group setting that might influence their opinion. And, I don't want to influence their opinion at that stage. I want their honest opinion. And we'll all come together at the end and form a Denver Broncos opinion.
At this point,
well, the team here is priority number one, and any other free time I have, I devote to the draft. I'll be glad when the draft's over.
Von Miller said he wants to be a little heavier because you're about 10 pounds heavier. Do you think do you like that for him?
I don't know yet. I haven't been around him enough. I'd like to watch him play some more. I certainly don't think it would hurt him at the weight he's used to playing at, but I just like guys to weigh. If they're training right, eating right, resting right, whatever they weigh, especially for a guy like him. So, I don't know. I got to learn more about him.
Thank you very much, Coach.
All right, we'll see you.
All right, there you go. There's Vic Fangio. And I think it's going to happen here pretty quick. I think Joe Flacco is coming up. It's DMAC with 104.3thefan.com's James Marilat. Any thoughts there, James, on...
A couple things stood out. I like his concept here to avoid the groupthink of, you know, everybody hears what he thinks of a player, so he has them all watch film, watch tape separately, come up with their own judgment, their own evaluation, then they come and collaborate. I like that. It's a little bit like his plan of not watching tape from last year. He wants to evaluate guys on the roster in his system on the practice field. Mm-hmm. I think that makes a lot of sense. The one that jumped out at me, though, that is worrisome, did I hear him, the question that Von Miller is going to come in at 10 pounds heavier? We've been down this path before with Von Miller.
When he
put on weight, and it was supposed to be, oh, this is great, he's going to have more strength. Von Miller's a guy who, what makes him great? His attribute that separates him from all the other guys is his speed around the corner, his ability to get that lean and not lose speed. Why is adding weight a benefit to a guy who plays his game based off of that? To me, it seems like it would be something that would slow him down and bring him back to the pack. That's concerning to me, and that was a red flag right off the top.
Yeah, when Vaughn got in all sorts of trouble and then he had his ACL tear, did he come back big. And he just wasn't the same Vaughn, as Vaughn would say about himself. Vaughn often speaks of himself in the third person, and if you're Von Miller, well...
You can
do whatever you want. You're one of the Avengers. But he wasn't as productive. And then we just saw and heard from him how he needed to lose weight and get back to that. And now we hear how he's got to put more weight on. And I don't really quite get it, but I'll take your word for it. The what has been interesting in this offseason is kind of this, you know, Vaughn can be better. Vaughn can be better sort of mantra that's been going on. Where do you think that's coming from and what that's all about?
I think it's because it's true. I think if you look at his stats from last year, the numbers are pretty good. They're pretty gaudy. But you'd be hard-pressed to go back through game by game or think back and come up with those game-changing plays. He had the pick in L.A. against the Chargers where they were about ready to get boat raced. He has the interception, and that changes that game.
But other than that, where's that big sack and you know, the strip sack that he had to change the tide of a game and turn some of those close losses into close wins? He didn't have impact plays, 14 and a half sacks or whatever the number turned out to be. But how many of them were really at the perfect time that impacted the outcome of the game? That's where I think he can be better. Where is Vaughn in the fourth quarter when they really need him versus putting up a bunch of hollow stats early in games?
Yeah, it's so funny. So Nate Jackson was filling in, amongst others, but Nate was here. And impact sacks, I love that if you could define what it is. But I kind of lost this arc because I was like, well, let's look at Bradley Chubb sacks. I mean, yeah, he had a dozen sacks. Okay. Well, which of them were impact sacks? But when I'm talking to an NFL guy like Nate Jackson, more or less he says, well, every sack's an impact sack because it has other, like, intangible meanings. And I'm like, well, what if you just, the guy goes down, you know, a yard behind scrimmage and the clock runs out into the first half and you still get credit for a sack? And he's like, yeah. Then you go into halftime and you're all excited that, you know, you did this sort of thing. And I'm like, well, if you're really telling me that that is a meaningful thing, then I'm going to lose this argument every single time because apparently every play you make, period, is impactful. But we all know in the real world that's not really true.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit like the Troy Tulowitzki home runs, right? It's hitting the home run in the seventh inning down 7-1. Hey, it still shows up on the stat sheet the same, but was it impactful? Was it the bottom of the ninth when you're down a run? I think Bradley Chubb had a lot of sacks that didn't have a big impact. You know,
I went through it. Of the 12, there were like four or five that just kind of were like not a big deal.
It felt the first sack he had in a preseason game, nobody blocked him. It was a fumbled snap, and he ran up and tackled the quarterback. There are hundreds of guys that play football who could have made that play.
Whereas, like, the most impactful sack, like, the best you can do with a sack is exactly what Vaughn did at Super Bowl 50. When it's a sack, it's a turnover, it's a touchdown. I mean, the power, that one play when the Broncos were already up 3-0 kind of won the Super Bowl early in the game. It's a 10-0 deficit, and the Panthers just had a, they just were not adept at coming back. They weren't set up like that. They were an incredible offense. They were used to playing from the lead for the most part, and they just weren't comfortable in that. So the degree of that sack is off the charts.
That's the top of the pyramid.
Near
that is the big sack on third down to end a drive. And then at the bottom of them are the ones that you talked about. The one you talked about of, hey, it's at the end of the half. It really didn't mean anything. Or you're chasing a quarterback and you shove him and he steps out of bounds a yard behind the line of scrimmage. Yeah, you technically got a sack. But did it really make a big impact on the drive, on the game, on anything? No.
So the challenge is, can your best player even have more of an impact? And can Bradley Chubb have, not to put him down, or not to say Bradley Chubb isn't a great player, because he clearly is a great player. But again, of course, right, because you have to compare that metric to what it could have been in that particular draft and where you are in the carousel of quarterbacks. And if you really want to take a look at it, you need to compare it to what is available this year at that particular position. And you have to compare it to what was your plan when you drafted Shane Ray number one and how you just threw him away and kind of threw away Shaquille Barrett as well.
He's a great player in terms of he was able to fill the role that they wanted Shane Ray to fill. Right? You drafted Shane
but
Ray.
But now you're chasing.
You're going to play he's going to play opposite Von Miller. Man, this guy's going to be great.
Yeah.
And he never lived up to it. So a guy somewhat living up to it or putting up big numbers seems great. But again, getting back to impactful, how great was it?
All right, when we come back, we'll have Earl Boykins ready to go. But if we're going to hear from Joe Flacco, I think. All right, so stick around. We'll hear that next.
You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
It's DMAC with 104.3thefan.com's James Merrillat. I'm thrilled that James is here today, and we're kind of in wait-and-see mode, right, Richie? Because we're waiting for Joe Flacco. Any second, we're going to hear from Joe Flacco. I was out at practice earlier today, and one of the cool things was James, like, Joe Flacco looks like a quarterback.
Well, they had a quarterback to look the part. He just never got on the field. That was Paxton Lynch. He looked like a quarterback.
When Paxton Lynch was like at this stage, when the rookie, it was pretty awesome.
He certainly...
I mean, he was tall.
Maybe didn't look good in a suit. He looked good in a uni. Case Keenum, and I remember tweeting this last year during training camp. He looked like Johnny Moxon in Varsity Blues. That's what he looked like. He looked like a guy from Dawson's Creek trying to play the role of a quarterback. I'm like, what is everybody seeing out here? It looks like he's in his, you know, like Hutch uniform. What's happening?
When I met Case Keenum, promise I didn't try to do that.
It's bad when sign number one.
I know. When I met him at his opening press conference, and he's standing next to John Elway, it was kind of weird. It just was like, wow, you're a starting point. You're the guy, huh? And, you know, he's got to be at least 6 foot tall. And I'm short. I just never envisioned in my life that I would be almost eye to eye with like a starting quarterback in the NFL.
But it's not just the height thing, right? You were at Super Bowl 48. You saw Russell Wilson. He's not that much taller.
No, you are correct. You are correct.
He just looks like, I don't know if it's more of an athlete. He just has the presence. It's the way he carries himself. You just look at that guy and go, you could walk into the room, have never followed the NFL, followed any sports, and if they said, okay, who's the guy in here that's the leader of the team, it would take you two or three picks and you'd get to that guy. You'd be on pick 42 before you went with Keenum.
You're right about that. There's probably a presence to Russell Wilson, and we'll get to him in a little bit, because he made the greatest announcement of all time. You know, in the world of I'm going to self-promote myself and do something, and like the Zion Williamson announcement that he was going to turn pro was like a Hollywood production, you know, with music and lighting and highlights and all this sort of stuff. I mean, I can actually get to this as we wait for Joe Flacco. Do you know what Russell Wilson's was about his deal?
In terms of his greatest announcement?
Yeah, he's laying in bed.
This is where I was figuring you were going.
He's laying in bed with Sierra.
Yep.
Who's an international superstar, laying in bed. Somehow he got, you know, the gold chains on. I don't know if he sleeps in the necklaces or they were on the... I'm not exactly sure how that happened. And he just laid it out like this. Oh, give me a... All right, hold on, I'll do it again.
Hey, Seattle.
Hey, Seattle.
We got a deal.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. But I'm going to see y'all in the morning.
Good night.
Time for y'all to go to bed.
Finally, we can go to sleep.
See y'all in the morning.
Yeah, that's how I want to announce everything in my life.
Yeah.
Go Hawks.
Yeah. Time to consummate. That's what they were announcing.
He's just making it clear he's the coolest guy in the world right there. He's the highest paid player in the NFL. And he's announcing that he's going to be that guy with an international superstar hanging out in bed. I think we all want to be Russell Wilson today.
So, when you walk into the room and you're trying to figure out, hey, who's the guy who's leading this team? There are multiple reasons why he may not physically stand above everybody else, but he's going to stand out above everybody else.
There's a swagger that can't be matched by... That didn't need post-production. That didn't need, you know, music or special effects. That's unfiltered. He did have to throw some bling on, I suppose. Unless he just... Maybe he just sleeps in the bling. I have no idea.
That is the way to do it.
Sierra did seem to have a little makeup on during the announcement as well, which, you know, I think there was a little thought.
It was a little... Do you think that was the first take?
I think it was done as casually as thought out as possible. No, I think they were acting a little bit with how tired they actually were. But the level of coolness on that is off the charts.
Oh, you're on board with this. You're not being facetious.
It was amazing.
I mean, it's envy worthy. I'll give you that.
Yeah, that's all I'm going for, really. It's just I'm jealous. I mean, I don't think there's anything more than that.
It just doesn't seem necessary.
Oh, none of it's necessary.
Okay.
You don't have to hit a golf ball and it explodes blue or pink. It's not necessary. Did you see what Tim Tebow did in order to get engaged?
Yeah, but he's getting engaged to Miss Universe.
It wasn't, none of that was necessary. He flew people in from like South Africa or something, and I think whittled in some sort of altar that he got engaged by, and I believe like Trace Adkins was singing a song in the background. It was, none of it's necessary.
Whittled from one piece of wood?
I believe so.
No, but if you're getting engaged to Miss Universe, hey, fly people in. Why not? You're going to want to announce that one.
You know what, James? In this world, everybody wants to announce everything all the time. You know, invite me to your one-year-old birthday party, sure. But I'm just saying, in the world of, hey, we're going to announce stuff, that was kind of cool.
It's not the first time Russell and Sierra have made big announcements either, but we'll leave it at that.
Another topic, another day. Good for Russell Wilson. We're still waiting for Joe Flacco. All right, we'll take a quick break, but we'll bring it to you live right here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.